Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is an Our Paranormal Afterlife remastered episode, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. I've recently gone back and listened to some of the first episodes, and I was reminded just how much valuable, relevant insight they still offer. I'm going to be re-releasing one episode each week, now with updated and remastered audio for a much better listening experience. In this episode, I'm talking to Carol Bowman about her research into children with past life memories. This was originally recorded with Carol on a scratchy landline phone call, and I feel the software has done a good job to remaster her sound. Well, welcome to the podcast. Thank you very much for giving us your time. I know that you have extensive experience in working with children with past lives and past life regression. Would you be able to tell us how you started in that?
Well, it began with an illness that I had beginning in my 20s and extending into my 30s. I had numerous lung problems, asthma, pleurisy, pneumonia a few times, and I just wasn't getting any better. And at the height of my illness, I started having what I knew were past life visions of myself dying of consumption in the 19th century. I saw myself as a man, but I didn't really know what to do with that information. And as luck would have it, within a few months, I met a past life therapist from Florida. And he was just passing through the city where I was living at the time. And I did one regression with him and saw two lives in which I died with affliction to my lungs. One in the 19th century of consumption. I got much more detail on that life that I saw in my vision. And then the big one for me was seeing that I had died in World War II in a gas chamber. So it was a very cathartic experience for me. I cried a lot. But it wasn't a big surprise. I think I always knew about these lives. They just really hadn't come to the surface. So after I was able to access the lives and went through the past life deaths with the therapist, my lungs cleared up. So after that happened, I decided that that was what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. I was in my 30s at that point. And I started training with different people in the field of past life therapy, and I ended up going to graduate school to get a degree in counseling. And it was interesting because I did my regression in 1987. By 1988, both of my kids revealed to me that they had phobias. And in my son's case, the case that I talk about most, he was 5 years old at the time. And we went to a fireworks display, and he became absolutely hysterical when the loud booming sounds began. And I couldn't comfort him. But you kind of wonder, kids have these irrational behaviors sometimes. So I kind of wrote it off at the time. But a few weeks later, we were in a situation where there was another loud booming sound. And again, he became hysterical and cried. And I had to take him out of this building where we heard the big booming sounds. And I was puzzled. I couldn't figure out anything in his short life that would cause such a reaction. And he was due to start school soon, and I was concerned that maybe he would be exposed to these sounds and haven't become hysterical, and I wouldn't be there. And as fate would have it, the therapist I did the past life regression with the year before had returned to Asheville, North Carolina, where I was living, because my friends wanted to do a regression, and my medical doctor, who had seen my recovery, he was astounded. And they all wanted to do regression, so I invited Norman Ng, the hypnotherapist, to stay with me and work with my friends. And I just casually mentioned to him that my son had this phobia of loud booming sounds, and since he was a hypnotherapist, I thought perhaps he could give Chase, my son, a post-hypnotic suggestion that the next time he heard these loud sounds, he wouldn't be afraid. And I was totally unprepared for what happened. He Chase was, you know, a little guy, 5 years old. He said, sit on your mom's lap, close your eyes, and tell me what you see when you hear the loud sounds that frighten you. Immediately, my five-year-old was talking about being a soldier, an adult, holding a gun, crouching behind a rock. And he said that the gun had a sword at the end. And I was flabbergasted because Chase didn't own a toy gun. He was not interested in war games, as a lot of young kids are. And he proceeded to say he didn't want to be there in battle. He was confused. And then he said, I'm shot in my wrist. And Norman let him through. He said, then what happens? And Chase said, they take me to a hospital, but it's just something like a tent with covering on top and poles. And they put me on a bed, but it's really a hard bench. And they put a bandage over my wrist and tell me I have to go back to battle. I don't want to go. I don't want to shoot anyone. I miss my wife and children. And I still get goosebumps when I tell that story, because at that point I realized this is nothing that Chase had been exposed to. And he was speaking in the first person as if he had been there. And he was describing something totally outside his experience.
When he was talking about this, did he have a much more mature voice?
No, but he used words that I didn't know that he knew. He was very matter of fact about it. He was in this other persona, but he didn't have another voice. You know, it was still his 5-year-old boy's voice.
Yeah, I was just wondering if it was like not the sound of it, but he was speaking with maturity.
He was. And especially, you know, this is what I found with children's memories too. They will talk in the first person as if it's currently happening. You know, he said, I'm a soldier. I'm behind a rock. I don't know what I'm shooting at. And that's what floored me too, that he was in this different persona. And when he said, I miss my wife and children, that was the moment that my world changed. My worldview completely changed in that moment. And I thought, maybe this is a past life. And Norman, the hypnotherapist who had been doing past life therapy for quite a while at that point, figured we were in a past life story, and he guided Chase through it. And what came up was the issue for Chase as this soldier in his past life was that he didn't know what he had signed up for, and he didn't want to be in a war situation. You know, it wasn't a glorified version that someone could see in a movie or on television. He was scared. He didn't want to be there. He missed his family. And he felt bad about shooting other people. So Norman reassured him by saying very in simple language to him, we live many different lives. We play different roles. Sometimes we are a soldier and have to kill others, or sometimes we are killed. There's no blame. It's just we're learning what it is to be human. And I thought, right, my 5-year-old isn't going to get this. But he did. You know, I could see his face relaxing. It had been a little anguished. He had an anguished look. So he talked about the injury on his wrist and how that he had to go back to battle. And he said, I have to go behind a cannon. And he described walking down a dusty road. And he said, there are chickens on the road. And he said, there's a big cannon on a wagon being pulled by a horse. You know, he remembered visually, he got a lot of detail, and it was also emotional. And then he said, they tell me to go behind the cannon. And at that point, he opened his eyes, hopped off my lap, and went to play with his Legos. And I thought, oh my God, you know, what was that? And the upshot of that 15-minute or so recollection was that his fear of loud booming sounds completely went away. In fact, he asked for his drum set after that experience, and he's now at age 35, among other things, he is a drummer, and which is kind of ironic. And what really intrigued me too was Chase had a chronic eczema on that spot on his wrist since he had been a baby, and we had tried antibiotic salves, changing his diet, all kinds of different things, and that eczema bonded to medical treatment. In fact, he used to scratch it so much when he went to bed that I used to bandage his wrist so he wouldn't bloody the sheets every night.
Yeah, it sounds quite bad.
Yeah, so what astounded me most was a few days after that recollection, his eczema cleared up completely.
That's amazing.
It was amazing. And that's what really, you know, there was, not only did the phobia go away, and that, you know, that took time to see that it really had gone away, but the fact that that physical condition cleared up immediately, and actually I didn't even say that, or maybe I did, it after I did my regression, my lungs cleared up, you know, that, and that's why my doctor was amazed, because he didn't think it was even possible with my condition. So anyway, here was Chase. He had this phobia relating to the loud booming sounds, and obviously it related to being on this battlefield. It was a battlefield memory, and that was probably the last thing he heard, a big booming sound, and then he had died. And he talked about this memory for another couple of years, and it was always with the same detail. And as he got a little older, by the age of 7, he had a greater vocabulary, and he remembered his life before he went off to war. He remembered his wife and his children. And it was interesting because he said he was a black soldier. And it turned out it was the American Civil War, and there were black soldiers fighting along the white soldiers for their emancipation. So that was kind of mind-blowing, and that's fascinating. So I started talking to other mothers in my community. This was before the internet. And I found that they had stories, and I started collecting the stories, and I started seeing patterns in these memories with children. And I used what I had learned and was learning about past life therapy with adults and applied it to my son's experience. And clearly, I saw that children can carry trauma over into this life just as an adult can. In fact, some of these issues show up early in childhood. And my son was lucky that his memory surfaced when it did, so he had some resolution as a child rather than carrying this with him throughout his life. So that led me to my research of children's memories. And my particular angle on this was that these memories are opportunities for the soul to heal. When children speak spontaneously, which they do, of their past life memories without any prompting from an adult, and they can begin talking about them as early as 2, as soon as they acquire language, or they can have phobias even before they can speak. And later when they start talking about the past life, there's usually a correspondence between the way they died and their present phobia. And just by talking about it, they can release the charge, the emotional charge around the experience, and the phobia clears up, and as well as some physical symptoms too, as in my son's case. So I saw this as an incredible new frontier to explore, that, you know, children, by remembering and having for the child to be able to talk about it and process it, they can release past life trauma as a child. And as you know, Simon, with your work with adults, a lot of clients come to us with lifelong patterns that relate to previous lives, and we have to access them in a little different way, you know, kind of in a deeper way, because the memories are more embedded. But it's the same principles that apply to adults. By accessing the past life, usually we're working with the past life trauma. That's where we get stuck, and the negative feelings or behaviors or thoughts. By accessing past life story, going through the trauma, going through the past life death, which is very important in processing it, we can release these old patterns. We don't have to drag them with us from lifetime to lifetime.
Well, could you tell us about, was it a boy called Blake that you were involved with, and he had a truck accident?
Yeah, and it was interesting in how it surfaced for him. He was about 2... I think not even 2 and a half, when one morning his older brother was leaving for school and he saw a truck out on the street, and he was telling his mother, the truck hit me. And Colleen, the mother, who I guess Blake at that point had maybe been starting preschool, she assumed he was talking about a toy truck. And she said, well, that was a toy truck, right? He said, no, big truck. Man hit me with big truck, something like that, you know, in two-year-old language. Excuse me. And she asked him open-ended questions, which is exactly the right thing to do. And he described how the truck ran over him. And he pointed to the left side of his body and he said, it hurt me. Colleen said, where did this happen? He said, on the street. And she said, well, what happened? And he said, they took me to, he said, a school. But and Colleen said, any big building to Blake would be a school. That was the only big building he knew. And she said, well, what happened? He said, I died. So at that point, she was quite shocked. She really didn't know what to think, but she remembered that a few days before she had seen Brian Weiss on television, who is a past life therapist, talk, just make one comment that children can have past life memories too. So she started thinking maybe that's a past life memory, but she didn't really give it another thought. You know, she had two other young children at the time. But about a week later, Blake saw another truck out on the street and he said the same thing. So it wasn't until a few months later when they were visiting London that Blake was in a stroller and they were, I guess, at Piccadilly, you know, busy intersection. And he jumped out of his stroller into the path of an oncoming truck. And fortunately, his father grabbed him by the collar and pulled him back. But at that moment, Colleen realized, I wonder if this is some kind of reenactment of what happened to him before. And she was very concerned. So when they got back to the States, she found a little ad I had put in a parenting magazine asking if your children had said anything about previous lives. And she contacted me. Oh, one other thing that I neglected to say. After Blake started talking about the truck hitting him, he developed these physical symptoms on the left side of his body where he said the truck ran over him. He would have aches and pains, and Colleen had taken him to a couple of doctors, and they couldn't find anything physiologically wrong with him. And he also started pushing her away. She would try to comfort him, and he would say, I love you, but I hate you. And that was very disturbing. And she was at the point of trying to find a therapist when she called me. And I was kind of going by the seat of my pants, you know, kind of developing this model to how to work with children. And I said, look, sometimes children have these traumatic memories and they can't distinguish between past and present. It's all current to them. So you need to tell him when he's relaxed before bedtime or after a bath that whatever happened before, he's in a different life, he's in a different body, and that she would keep him safe. And I was kind of going on the clues she was giving me that Blake had also said when she asked him, where was your mommy when this happened, my mama. He said, mommy had gone bye-bye at the store, you know, his two-year-old language. So we kind of pieced that together and thinking, well, maybe he's afraid she's going to do the same thing and this would happen again. So anyway, she affirmed to him that he's now safe. He's now in another body. They need to know that because children that age cannot distinguish. You know, they still think they're experiencing that. So she did that, and about a week later, she called me, and she said, I just can't believe it. You know, the change in him is so dramatic. After I talked to him and did what you said, told him what you told me to tell him, he completely snapped back to his former happy self that he was before he had this memory. And she said, the amazing thing was, too, that it seemed like all those aches and pains went away too in that moment. She said she could just feel this something, a weight lift off of him. So the techniques worked. That was kind of my test case. And I found that you can talk to children about their past life memories, especially the traumatic ones, and assure them that this was something that happened before in a different body. Now they're here in a new body, and it's not going to happen again. They just need that reassurance. And sometimes they need a little more, too. They have to talk it through. They might have guilt that they're carrying from previous life or sadness due to a loss. So you need to talk them through that, too. But clearly, you can work with children. They're having spontaneous memories. You don't need any regression techniques that we use with adults. So that was kind of my breakthrough case, where I saw that these techniques can work with other children. And that was, 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And so I've got hundreds of cases since then, and, confirmation from other parents that these techniques have worked with their own children who are having traumatic memories.
Because I read that you said that when you see children, they seem to go into a light trance state or an altered state of awareness while they're remembering. Is this some kind of self-hypnosis?
In a sense, as we know, hypnosis is really just a focused awareness. So, I think that the memories are just surfacing and they're tapping into them. They're kind of in that state where they're getting images or impressions. So they have that abstracted look on their faces, like they're zoned out.
Yeah.
Yeah, or like in a trance. But, when they're also imagining things, playing or doing other things, they can go into that state because if you've seen a child play and they're really into what they're playing, they go into that zone too. Sometimes children's play activities mirror their past life experiences.
You said there are four signs for this as a matter of fact tone. Consistency of story over time, knowledge beyond experience, right, and corresponding behavior and traits.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all indicators, are they, that a child would really be remembering a past life and it's not just some kind of play or imagination?
Right. Like with the tone, that we touched on before, they're very matter of fact when they say that, talk about these things. They're saying it as, this is the truth, this is what's happening. And you might say, well, did you see this on TV? No, I was a policeman or I was a fireman. They will counter anything you say because they're really embodied in that moment, in that different persona. So, they're very certain about what they're saying. And when children have fantasies, they talk about, I was a cowboy before. Their tone of voice is different. This is very matter of fact. It doesn't have that lilting quality to it that child fantasy has. And they will often talk in the first person, saying, I was a fireman. So that's one sign. And like I said, with my son's case, he talked about his memory in the same detail over a period of about 2 or 3 years. So the story remains the same. They don't change the story. As they develop more language skills, they can add to the story. The obvious thing is when a 2, 3, or 4-year-old, these kids are usually less than 5 years old. Usually the memories kind of start fading around the age of 5. So they're younger than that when they start talking about their past lives, usually around 3 or 4. And I forgot where I was going with that one, but there is that consistency. And also, when a child that age starts talking about how they died in the past, that really gets our attention. And you're in past life territory when they talk about how they died or how they fell off the boat and fell in the water and then went to heaven. And a lot of kids talk about heaven, regardless of their religious training, which is interesting. And or if they talk about things that there's no way in the world they could possibly know at that age. And some of the more remarkable cases, children know very specific details about things they just couldn't know about in their 2, 3, or 4 years of experience. Like, I have one case that I'll talk about of a little boy who remembered being a firefighter on 9/11 in New York City. And he was, this little boy, I can't use their names, I don't have permission to do that, but he was about 2 and a half, and his mother was reading a Curious George book, a little children's book, and they had a picture, a drawing of the New York skyline on the cover. And he pointed to one of the twin towers and he said, "Mommy, why did the bad men knock over the building?" And she was taken aback because he didn't know about 9/11. It was nothing he'd seen on television at 2 and a half. And after that moment, he started talking about his life as a fireman. But the odd thing was, since he was very little, he always wanted things relating to firefighting, you know, toy fire trucks. And when he was potty trained, he got this firefighter's outfit, you know, a little kid's version, you know, with the complete with a toy axe and whatever equipment they have. And he set up his room as like a little fire station. And one of his play activities would be every morning he would get up, take his little toy axe, and pretend that he was knocking down one of the walls in their house. And he would say it aloud. So after he saw the picture of the New York City skyline and the Twin Towers, he started talking about it more and more, about when he was a fireman. He said his fire station was downtown, and he was in California. He'd never been to New York City, but in New York, they call that lower part of Manhattan downtown. And he remembered the number in his fire truck. He knew very specific details about firefighting. In fact, when he was about 3 or 3 and a half, they went on a field trip to a firehouse. And he was telling the fireman, you know, "Oh, when I had my truck, da-da-da-da-da." And the fireman went up to her and said, "Your husband's a firefighter, right?" And she said, "No, not at all." And they were flabbergasted because he knew about levers in the truck and raising the bucket. And he said his fire truck had a television on it, which was actually around that time they were introducing TV screens, or, you know, screens into the fire trucks. So he had uncanny knowledge of firefighting. And he gave his mother, and he posted this, the mother posted this case on my past life forum that anyone can access through my website. And because of all the detail he gave, we were able to identify who he was through an internet search. We saw the obituaries and we narrowed it down. And we realized that his family was very devout Irish Catholic, lived on Long Island, where a lot of New York firefighters lived. But we thought it would be too shattering to the family's belief system to ever contact them, to tell them that their son, brother, fiance was alive as this little boy in California. So it's an incredible case. It is probably the most detailed case that I've seen of an American child remembering a previous life. But I totally supported the mother not wanting to go public with it, because that was such a big public event and still so raw for a lot of people, especially the families, that if their belief system precluded it, it could be just too upsetting for them. And we could tell that from their posts and the tributes they wrote, that they're very devout Catholics. So I think it would have been extremely upsetting to them to hear about reincarnation.
Well, I read Jim Tucker's books, and that case reminds me of James Leninger.
Mm-hmm, which I worked with, Leininger. Andrea contacted me in 2001, I believe it was. when James was two. And he was having nightmares about five times a week. He would wake up screaming, "I can't, little man can't get out, the plane's on fire." And this went on and on and on, and they had no idea what was going on, but everyone was losing sleep over this. When Andrea's mother gave her a copy of my first book, Children's Past Lives, and she contacted me, and she told me her story. And at that point, they just wanted advice on how to help him with these night terrors or nightmares. And I told her how to speak to him, you know, just wait until he's going through it and engage him in it and ask what happened. Use open-ended questions and assure him that whatever happened is over and he's now safe. And they did that, and she said immediately the nightmares went from five times a week to like one every 2 weeks. And then James started talking more and more about his plane crashing. And in his case, too, he had an obsession with airplanes. He knew a lot of things about airplanes a two-year-old couldn't know. And one example Andrea gave was that anytime they went into a store, if there was a little toy airplane, I mean, he would have a fit if she didn't buy it for him. And it was kind of embarrassing for her. But she said on one of the airplanes, there was something, it looked like a bomb underneath. And Andrea said to little James, "Oh, it's a bomb." And he said, "No, mommy, that's a drop tank." And he was right. I don't even know what a drop tank is. But he knew things about planes, and he told his parents as he got a little older that his father, who was very, you know, kind of devout Christian, didn't want to believe that it could be reincarnation. So everything that James said about his life as a pilot, Bruce, the father, would challenge. And little James said he flew a Corsair. So Bruce would look it up. He'd do, at this point, there was internet, you know, he would do internet research, and he found that there was an airplane in World War II and that was used on aircraft carriers, and it was Corsair. So Bruce started asking little James questions. Well, maybe it was Andrew who asked this question. "Well, if you had an airplane, where did it take off of?" And he said, "A boat." And they asked him the name of the boat, and he said, "Natoma." So, you know, Bruce ran to the computer and found there was an aircraft carrier in World War II called the Natoma Bay. So, you know, every corner, you know, when James came up with these specific names, he named his best friend James Larson. Just so many details. And every time Bruce tried to disprove it, he found that, yes, there was actually a person on the Natoma Bay named James Larson. I think that was his name. I can't remember at the moment. But they were able to trace who James had been. And there was an eyewitness to his former self by the name of James Houston. He was also a James. And his plane was hit near Iwo Jima. It was hit in the front of the plane. The engine caught on fire, and he went down into the Pacific. James also, when he was a little boy, even around three, he would make drawings of a bullet with planes being shot down from the sky. You know, they're very primitive child's drawings, but they clearly depicted battle with airplanes and a boat. And he would always sign his drawings as soon as he could learn to make letters, James 3. So when they found out that his former name was James Houston Jr., the present James would have been in James 3. So, you know, it just got freakier and freakier. And I had gotten an offer to do a major TV show in the States here with a major network, and I was looking for a case. So by this time, I had convinced Bruce that, yeah, other kids have these memories too. It's nothing to be afraid of. It doesn't conflict with your religious beliefs. And he agreed to let James be in part of this TV show that they did on his case. And it's an amazing case. And you can find it on YouTube. If you Google World War II pilot or James Leininger, L-E-I-N-I-N-G-E-R, you can find the ABC primetime piece that we did. And it was really, really good. So I worked with the Leininger family over a number of years trying to, just counsel them, how to deal with this. And I got them a literary agent and they got a book published called Soul Survivor, S-O-U-L, Survivor, which is the account of James's case. And the way it unfolded was really interesting. The fact that he had the nightmares, which is not uncommon for children having traumatic past life memories, and the way they resolved very quickly when Andrea talked to him about it and let him talk about it and acknowledged it. And the way they did the research to find out who he had been in a previous life. And one of the amazing things is that James Houston, the pilot, had a surviving sister who was in her 80s who lived in California. And they contacted her and were able to corroborate all the details little James Leininger remembered of his former life, about family life before he went into the service. So he had very vivid memories of when their father had been in a car accident, and he remembered some paintings that had been made of each child in the family. So these were things that you couldn't even dig up with research, which he knew. So it was a fabulous case, and since then it's been publicized a lot. And last I heard, there was a movie in production. I don't know if it's going to be released or not. I don't know what happened to it. But there are other cases like that.
Well, I was going to say sometimes, or I think quite often, children with past life memories also have physical abnormalities or birthmarks. Because I've read Dr. Ian Stevenson's book, Reincarnation and Biology Intersect. I think you worked with, is it a woman called Kathy? And she had a son, Chad, with an eye problem.
Yeah, that after writing the first book, it was so much work. It took me, 4 years. I thought, I'm not going to write another book. And then Kathy Luke called me. She was a mother in the Chicago area whose 2-year-old had died of neuroblastoma about 13 years or was a little more before she had called me. And at the time, his name was James, too. It's just coincidental. And James had, at the time of his death, he had a large tumor behind his left eye, which caused blindness in that eye. He had a big tumor behind his right ear, which they had biopsied. He had 17 tumors in one leg. He had tumors all over his body. It sounded really horrible. And they had hospitalized and they put an IV in his neck. And at some point when he was, I think about 19, 20 months old, they said, there's nothing more we can do, just take him home. She was a single mom at the time. And little old James saw her crying. He said, Mommy, don't cry for me. And after he died, she didn't cry. She honored his wishes. And after he died, Kathy met a really nice man. They married and had a daughter and a son. And then little Chad was born. And Kathy had had a C-section. As she was coming out of the anesthesia, these doctors walked into the room and they said, we have really bad news. It looks like your son is blind in his left eye. We don't know what's wrong. Said it looks like he has a big cyst behind his right ear. And she said, just bring me my baby. She was a little shocked after having lost one child. She was, the way they set it up was a little traumatic for her. So when they brought little Chad, she could see that his left eye was a little distended as James's had been from the tumor. she saw the big cyst behind his right ear, and they said, oh, it's just a cyst, it will go away. But she knew that's where a major tumor had been that they had biopsied. And she saw on his neck something that looked like a surgical scar. And she said, what's that? And they said, oh, it's just a birthmark. And she said when she held that child, she had had, after little James had died, she had had two other children. And she said when she held this child, Chad, she said it was a familiar feeling. She hadn't had that with her other children, but she felt, looking at that child, that it was James. You know, somehow this soul was the same. And she didn't want to tell anybody because she grew up in a very religious household, Christian. I mean, the kind of fire and brimstone Christianity where they would have said, you know, this is of the devil. So she kept it to herself. But as Chad got older, he would make remarks about James's life. He remembered the apartment that they had lived in together. He remembered toys that he had that they presently didn't have. And he actually, he said a number of things, but at one point he said to his 10-year-old brother when he was about four, he said, well, I was sick before and I died, but now I'm back, which probably terrified his brother. So Kathy called me because she really didn't know what to make of this or how to handle it or how to talk to her son. So we had many conversations on the phone over the next few years. And it was really interesting because when she first called me, her affect, the way she talked, she was very flat. She sounded very sad. And after we talked for a couple of years, I remember she called and my husband answered the phone. He said, it's Kathy Luke, but she sounds completely different. She had changed. She told me after she realized that it was possible that, you know, her son really is the reincarnation of the child who died, she didn't need to go to the cemetery anymore. Her grief really, the grief that was repressed because her son told her not to cry, she was able to let go of to quite a great degree. And, you know, we were both agreeing it's a miracle that this can happen, and most people don't know it. Or if they thought it was happening, they wouldn't say anything because they'd be so terrified of the consequences. So after I got Kathy's case, I said, okay, you know, I need to write another book. And once I made the decision, I was flooded with cases of people in the same family who die and come back to the same, reincarnate in the same family as a child. So I found it, Ian Stevenson talked about this too. There are a lot of cases in India where people, or in other cultures, where people expect someone in the family dies, grandpa dies, he can come back into the family as a baby.
When my daughter, she's 15 now, but when she was mm-hmm. about 3 years old, we were in the kitchen and she just said to me out of the blue, you know, when you were this small, I used to pick you up. I found that to be quite interesting. But then she just carried on playing like she hadn't even said it.
Well, was there anyone in your family who had died before she was born? A mother, a grandmother? Or?
Both my parents.
Oh, wow. Well, have you seen any indications that there's a similarity between either parent? I mean, you know, a father can come back as a granddaughter.
I haven't, to be honest. If she's like anybody, I think she'd be more like my mother.
Yeah, well, that would be the obvious one. But, you know, just for the sake of discussion, you know, you can change sex too in different incarnations. But yeah, it would be how old were you when your mother died?
Well, I was 27.
Okay, so you weren't a child, but you were youngish. You know, if there was a reason for her to come back into the family, she would, or just coming back out of love.
Yeah.
In fact, I called the second book Return from Heaven. And when it was translated into Portuguese in Brazil, they changed the name Love Brought Me Back. And I thought that was a better title. Because in a lot of cases, loved ones come back because of that love connection. It draws them back into the same family. So there seems to be some kind of choice about it.
And also, I think that there are soul groups that they work together, don't they, in families yeah. and friendships and things.
Absolutely. But it's interesting because in the family connection too, wow, there are a lot of reasons why somebody wants to come back into the family, you know, because maybe they're needed, maybe their life was cut short, or, you know, just out of love. So, you know, it's a very beautiful concept too, and it's real. And I think people need to know that's possible, especially when you lose a child. And as I said, I've gotten, you know, the most poignant cases are when a child dies and comes back to the same mother, you know, within could be a couple of years, less than that. Yeah, it happens. And there was a pretty well-known case in England about two girls, the Pollock twins that Ian Stevenson investigated. It was, I think, in the 50s or 60s. And they were walking to church or to school, and a car ran the curb and hit both of them, killed both of them. And I think the father was a believer in reincarnation, and he felt, my girls will come back. And his mother got pregnant with twins, and the twins had birthmarks, I think, relating to the accident. And it was clear to them that both girls had returned as the twins. And I can't remember what, you know, it was after 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, I can't remember the interval, but it happened.
Now, there is something I've noticed, which I'm sure you've noticed, is it seems that a large proportion of the children that remember past lives say that they'd had a traumatic death. Do you think this has a bearing on whether or not they have a memory of a past life?
Absolutely. I mean, as you can see with adult cases too, the trauma leaves a big imprint. And, you know, if a child is having a pleasant past life memory, we're not going to notice it as much. Or, you know, if they have, except if they have an unusual talent, you know, if they have a precocious ability in the piano or other talents that are, you know, seem to be innate or, you know, can't, or a genius, you know, these child prodigies, we aren't going to really notice the positive things that carry over. But when they have trauma, that really the soul wants to release the trauma. The soul wants to heal from all these traumas. So we're more likely to notice, you know, the negative impact, unless it's, you know, some, like I said, some amazing talent that they bring in. So I think the trauma leaves a big imprint, you know, it can leave it emotionally, physically, mentally, and it's a deep imprint, but it can be healed. You don't want to heal the other good stuff. You know, you just want to, you want to clear the way so that can come through more, because and children too carry this wisdom. You know, when you talk about old souls, when you see a child, an old soul, well, yeah, they are. And sometimes they carry incredible wisdom. That little boy I talked about who remembered being the 9/11 fireman, the mother said he is so altruistic. You know, he's so compassionate towards other people, other children. And the way he died, when he described his death, he couldn't get the people out of the building. He was trapped in one of the towers. And he started crying when he was telling his mother that he couldn't get the people out of the building. So his last thought, you know, with the last thoughts and feelings, the trauma gets locked in. But his last thoughts and feelings were for helping, about helping others. And he carried that quality in too, which I thought was really interesting. So not only do we carry the trauma, we carry wisdom and altruism and all of these other things that we learn over many lifetimes.
Carol, thank you very much for coming onto the podcast. It's been a great conversation, and I've got tons of questions left, but we're just running out of time.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Simon.
Would you like to tell us your website?
Yeah, it's pretty simple, carolbowman.com, carolbowman.com. And the books are Children's Past Lives and Return from Heaven. I guess they're available through Amazon in the UK. I don't know. I don't even know if they're still in print over there, but they're definitely in print here.
I've definitely seen them on Amazon over here.
Okay, good. And if you go to my website, go to the forum, and you will find hundreds of cases where people have sought help with their children's past life memories, just either confirming that their child is not crazy, you know, that it is a past life memory. But I also have a team of moderators that help the parents too. And occasionally I'll jump in with advice for parents. But the case that I described about the 9/11 fireman, the mother's name, the way to identify it is she logged in as Baby RN. She's a registered nurse. She's a pediatric nurse. So it's Baby RN. And you can see it got, I don't know, 6,000 hits or something like that. But, you know, read through that one, and it's really mind-boggling how detailed these memories can be. The only way to find it is on the forum, because she's not going to publish it.
Well, I'm definitely going to do that. Thank you very much, Carol, for giving us your time.
Well, thanks for having me.
And that was an interview with Carol Bowman about her research into children with past life memories. And my book, titled Verified Near-Death Experiences, is on Amazon, sold over 2,000 copies, has more than 50 five-star reviews, and you can get it on paperback, audiobook, or Kindle. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.